instead, what I do is I spend just a couple minutes actually recording a screen capture video showing them exactly what to do.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here, and today's special guest is Dave Kaminsky. He's from a site called webvideouniversity.com, and we're going to be tackling the topic of web video, surprisingly enough. Welcome, Dave.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, James.
So, Dave, I hear you're a former U.S. Marine. Is that true?
That is true. I was in the United States Marine Corps for 5 years.
Right. And you somehow found your way into making videos and teaching people about videos.
Yeah, the path I took was not the most direct path. I actually started as a direct response copywriter, and this was back when most promotions were sent through the regular mail. The internet really hadn't taken off, and I was writing sales copy for clients, and some of them wanted to start including videos, VHS tapes, with their sales packages they were sending out. And I had a background in photography, so I went ahead and started doing video for them. And then in the early 2000s, internet started taking off. Web video became something that was actually doable. And I was burned out on writing sales copy day in and day out. So what I decided to do was focus on video exclusively, and I decided to basically share with people, you know, what I had learned from actually doing the stuff for years and years and years, and ended up starting webvideouniversity.com, I think a little over 4 years ago, and that's what we've been doing ever since.
It seems like quite an established site. I'm pretty sure I came into contact with it through a joint venture approach at some point through a help desk, and we reviewed the product and then started recommending it. I went through the course as well, and I really liked the quality of the material. It now makes sense to me that with your copywriting background, that's probably partially been the reason for your success online, is actually applying this sales knowledge to a product and marketing it.
Yeah, I think that that's critical. Knowing, you know, at least the basics of the sales process, it's going to help you whether you're doing video, whether you're putting together an opt-in form or a website or a squeeze page or whatever.
What do you think about the trend of video sales letters with the scrolling text and voiceover approach?
I'm kind of on the fence about that, because I think the internet is not a medium where it's just video. It can't be confused with television where, you know what, there's a 2 minute commercial on there or a 30 minute infomercial, and at the end you have to call a telephone number. The internet shouldn't be confused with that. People obviously want to see video, but they want to see text as well. So I'm kind of on the fence about doing a sales letter or something where it's just strictly a video and someone has to wait to the very end to take whatever action they want, and then the people will disable the player control bars, and it doesn't spread, you know, very much goodwill. What I would recommend to people is put video and text on the same page, because your audience wants to see both.
Right. So I've noticed yesterday there was a big promotion came out, and it was a forced video. There was no player controls. It was one of those cheesy sales videos with just text, and you had to wait till the end. And there was outrage in one of my communities about it. And some people are saying, well, what's the problem with that? If it works, what's bad about it? But I think you've just explained that really well, and I appreciate that. I've certainly much prefer with my sales videos to offer controls as a courtesy. What's your take on face-to-camera versus text or screencast-type videos for sales letters? Have you got any hard data on either of those? Have you tried them both?
Yeah, I do have some hard data on that. And, you know, without getting into specifics, you are better off putting your face on camera rather than just doing like a straight PowerPoint presentation or something like that. And the reason for that, I believe, I don't know anyone could prove it one way or the other, I believe it's a trust issue. If you, if you put your face on video for all the world to see, you know, you can't fake that. You can't fake who you are. But if you're doing just a straight PowerPoint presentation, who knows, you know, who you really are? You could claim to be anything or anyone.
Well, I think actually Professor Cialdini explained it quite well in one of his books. It was 50 proven ways to get yes or something. And he talked about scientific experiments where if two people had talk to each other first before they do business, they were more likely to come to a deal. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And
sure.
Right. So let's sort of drill into this face to camera stuff. I notice you've got quite a lot of face to camera videos up on the internet. What sort of advice would you have to someone who is thinking about doing that but might be a little bit nervous?
What they need to know is that everyone goes through the same process. When you first sit down in front of a video camera, you know, you're not getting any feedback like you would from a person. You're basically staring at, you know, a black lens staring back at you, and people suddenly, no matter how easygoing they might be in everyday life, they suddenly get tongue-tied and they get nervous and they come off sounding and looking not too genuine. Expect that from the beginning. The only way to get over that, despite what anyone might tell you, whatever little secrets they have, the only way to get over that is to keep doing videos consistently. And it's not going to take very long. It's going to take maybe half a dozen videos, and you're naturally going to get very, very comfortable on camera. So for people who are nervous about it, everyone goes through the same process. You're going to suck at first, to be blunt. Keep doing it 4, 5, 6 videos, and you're going to be significantly better. And if you keep at it beyond that, you're going to be what people would consider a natural on camera.
Right. That's terrific advice. Just further developing this, if someone wants to get started with this face-to-camera stuff, how high-tech do they need to go in terms of equipment? It's a very common question whenever video comes up. What microphone do I use? What camera do I use? And should it be high quality? Is it okay to put out something just to get started? Can you just use the camera in your computer screen? What's the best start?
Yeah, if you would have asked me this 4 or 5 years ago, the answer would have been that, you know what, you need to invest money in some decent equipment. What's happened with camera technology and technology in general is that it's gotten so good. You know, a camera in an iPhone is going to rival a camera that costs several thousand dollars, you know, 6, 7 years ago. So that's good news for people, because you don't need to go out and spend a bunch of money on equipment. And before I go any further, the big thing I want people to remember is that when it comes to equipment, you're absolutely right. People always want to know what to use. But you need to think in terms that, you know what, it's not the arrow, it's the archer. In other words, it's not necessarily the equipment that you use, it's the experience that you gain with it. And that's where people stumble, because they actually, you know, don't make videos as often as they should. So the good news is you can go ahead and start with any basic equipment. You can start with a webcam. It doesn't matter, because we know that just having your face on video is probably going to convert better than doing a regular screen capture video. So don't get hung up on the equipment. Start within your budget. As you start earning more money and as you get better, then you can go ahead and invest in more expensive equipment. But really, what the more expensive stuff is going to give you is just going to make your workflow faster. That's why professionals use expensive equipment, because time is money to them and it makes them complete their work a lot faster.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, I recently stepped up my equipment. One of the things I did was start recording the audio on a separate device. So I think it possibly increased my production time slightly, but the production values went up dramatically from a sound perspective.
Yeah, and that's something I do want to point out. When it comes to video quality versus audio quality is actually more important. There's been several studies, and I can't remember, you know, where the links are to them off the top of my head, but basically people were shown two versions of the same video. One had horrible video but great audio. The other one had horrible audio but great video. And the majority of the people, each and every time, watched the video that had the great sounding audio longer than the other video.
Nice. So sound quality is super important. The other thing that comes up when you start delving more into video, things like lighting. Is that also important?
Well, yeah, it is. Basically, light is like food and water to a camera, particularly these days where pretty much everything is an HD camera, and HD cameras need even more light. And that it is something that where there's a difference between the cheap equipment and the more expensive equipment and how it deals with light. If you're using an inexpensive camera, if you go out and shoot in natural daylight, it could be outside or it could be just in a well-lit room, all natural daylight, your video is going to look really, really good. Cheap cameras, all cameras handle natural daylight really good. Where that camera is going to fall apart is if you're indoors and you're in lower lighting, or if you're using any type of professional studio lights, the lower end cameras are going to struggle. The higher end cameras are actually going to start performing better in situations like that. Now, as far as, you know, should you go out and invest a bunch of money in lights? If you're just starting out, my answer is going to be no. If you do want to spend, you know, maybe $100 or $200 on a set of lights, what you want to use are called softbox lights. Softbox, one word or two words, it doesn't matter. You can go out to Amazon.com and type in softbox light, or go out to eBay and you can find a kit that will work absolutely fine for you. Two or three lights, and you can get them for anywhere between, you know, $100 to $200.
That sounds like how I started with those little Mr. Whippy light bulbs.
Yeah.
Okay, so light's important. I certainly noticed recently I got an SLR camera, a Canon 60D, and it operates with almost no light. I can go out at dusk and film, and it looks like day. It's such a great contrast between the Kodak ZI-8 that I was using before that.
Yeah, I use a 60D myself. It's one of the cameras that it's kind of under the radar. It's a fantastic value. And it's my recommendation to people who want to use a DSLR camera. Use the Canon 60D. It's a steal.
Same for me. I mean, even in Australia, it's under $1,000 to get a Canon 60D brand new, and you get a 50mm lens. You get that nice blurred background effect. But I think that the thing that I noticed that surprised me more than anything is how many of my viewers replied back and said, "What camera are you using? What are you using to record these videos?" So it was a visible, noticeable difference, enough to prompt them to actually ask about it. So that to me says, well, because of the proliferation of all these cameras now, everyone's got an iPhone or a Kodak or a Flip. Maybe that extra $1,000 in the business is going to set you apart from a lot of other marketers if you're looking for the edge.
Exactly, particularly with the DSLR, because you will get the depth of field. And if people don't know what that means where the background is blurry behind you, but you're in focus. It's what you see, you know, in film. It's how our eyeballs naturally see things. And people do notice it when they see video online. And again, with the Canon 60D, it's almost impossible to shoot bad-looking video with the camera.
Now, you've seen a lot of students apply your methods, and you get a lot of questions, I imagine, and feedback, and you would have probably been sent to a few things to observe how they're using video. Can you tell us some of the most interesting things you've ever seen people use videos for? I mean, the obvious ones are selling things and for educating or tutorials or creating information products. But what about tricky things? You know, I've used them for thank you upon purchase, or a reactivation of a cold list, or a feedback request, invitations to events or whatever, testimonials. What other ways can people use videos once they get their camera and they skill up a little bit?
One of the unique things that I've seen people do, and I guess people starting out aren't going to be able to afford this, but I've known people who use video cameras for video testimonials, and what they'll do is they'll buy a lot of, you know, 12 to 24 inexpensive pocket video cameras. And because they buy them in bulk, you know, they might get them for $50 a piece. And what they do is they'll send them out to their customers or clients, or maybe to the best people who have spent the most money with them. And they'll say, "Hey, here's a free camera as, you know, my way of saying thank you for being such a loyal customer. Can you please record a video testimonial and send it to me. And, you know, so that is a way where it's going to cost you a little extra money, but it's a great way to get video testimonials, which are probably one of the most effective types of testimonials, considering that testimonials have actually lost some steam, at least the written kind. I'm going to go back to the sales video portion, because one of the most interesting things I've seen video used for when it comes to actually selling something was a company that sold jigsaw puzzles. And you think, how in the world can you put together a sales pitch for jigsaw puzzles? And how in the world are you going to put together a compelling video that's going to make people want to get jigsaw puzzles? And they put the video together so well that you wanted to buy their jigsaw puzzles. So it's important for people to realize, no matter what market you're in, there's going to be some application to video. Don't think that you can't make a sales video for your product or service, or don't think that you can't use video, you know, in some other way. Me personally, the way I use video a lot is I get, like you said, James, I get a lot of questions from people. And 9 times out of 10, it's a question on how to do something within software. And me, like everyone else, time is money. I could sit there and spend 15 minutes typing out a response to a complicated question, and the people are going to get the response. They're going to read it. They're not going to understand, so on and so forth. Instead, what I do is I spend just a couple minutes actually recording a screen capture video showing them exactly what to do. And as far as a customer service point of view, it's really cut things down for me. It's really cut the amount of time I spend on customer service way down.
That's a hot tip. And you can also publish those, I imagine, and build up quite a nice online library to send people to when you get the same support request.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So content creation and education, and it still builds a relationship and bonding with the customer. It's a terrific idea.
Right.
In fact, my daughter was making videos for Fiverr gigs where she was filming the dog eating someone's name in mincemeat and then playing it back in reverse. So it was like vomiting out mincemeat in the person's name. That was very popular. So, you know, with just an iPhone or a camera, the world is open these days. Now, yep. I learned something very recently, which, you know, surprised me, but I think everyone who's in this particular area of internet marketing or business should know. And I've put out a lot of information products and I've done a lot of screen recordings, but my friend and your friend, Will, was teaching me that the resolution that you record at should be as close as possible to the resolution you wish to play back at. And that shocked me, because I've got big screens and I would have thought logically, if I record on a bigger screen and then I render it down, that I'd get better quality. But perhaps you can fill us in on the technicalities of this.
Yeah. It's a funny thing with screen capture video. When you're recording something on your screen, it doesn't work the same as a live camera video. If you go ahead and shoot video with a live camera, you know, you can put it on a 60-foot movie screen and it looks good, and you can reduce it down to a little 2-inch video on a computer screen and it's still going to look good. The same thing does not happen with screen capture video, and that's because it's basically an image, and images don't scale too well. If you've ever created like a logo and then you try to enlarge it, or you try to reduce it, and suddenly that text becomes unreadable. Same thing happens when you record something on your screen. So like you mentioned, what you want to do, if you want to get crystal clear quality, you want to record your screen at the same dimensions you'll display it at on your website. As an example, let's say if I'm putting together a training video on how to use video editing software, and I want to display it to people on my website at the dimensions of 960 pixels across and 540 up or down, I'm going to go ahead and record my screen at that same exact size, or at least I'm going to try to. The problem you run into a lot of times when you're doing screen recordings is you're going to have to have you're going to have to record it at a size that's actually larger than you will display it. It's just because, you know, you can't fit everything on the screen that you want to show. So in that case where you absolutely must record your screen a little bit bigger than what you'll display it at, you want to try to do it in as small as, of increments as possible. You don't want to like double the size. You just want to use, you know, a mathematical ratio where you're increasing it, you know, by, let's say, 18% or 36%. You don't want to double it, but that is the big secret. Otherwise, you're going to get, your screens are going to get, screen recording is going to get really fuzzy if you try to record your, you know, your full screen and then you go put it on YouTube or whatever where it's displayed small. Everything's going to be fuzzy and very, very hard for people to see.
That is an awesome tip. And it's just one of those things that I think everyone should know that they probably don't.
Right.
You must get, there must be a couple more just like that, that you'd think everyone would know, but you know, maybe doesn't make perfect sense. It could be reverse logic. Of all the things that you've seen in the last year or so, what thing just keeps coming up over and over and over again?
Oh boy, that's a great question. What comes up over and over and over again? I would say the thing I get over and over again concerns mobile devices. People want to know why a certain video will not play on their mobile device. And the answer to that is because not all mobile devices are equal. Apple devices, iPhones, and iPads, if you do your videos a certain way, they will play on all iPhones and iPads. When you go to Android devices or BlackBerry devices, it's a free-for-all, especially with Android because it's an open operating system. Each phone manufacturer takes Android and they tweak it for their own use. And then they have 50 different phones, and each phone might have different video capabilities. So what happens is you put together a video, and it plays on, let's say, Bob's phone. Bob's got an Android phone. It plays fine on that. That same video may not play on Jim's Android phone. So that's the biggest thing for people to understand, that you know, there's not, unfortunately, a single format that's going to play on every possible mobile device. What you do instead is you go after the mobile devices that have the largest number of people viewing videos, which are going to be Apple devices. And if you encode your videos for those devices, then, you know, 90% of your audience is going to be able to watch your videos without any problems.
Great. So the encoding process, you might want to just explain that, because we export our video from our editing software. We have to encode it for the web if we're using our own hosting, right? Now, in my case, I've switched to Wistia, so I'm pretty right. I can just load it up and it will encode it and make a player that works on most things like YouTube, but private. Sure. Tell me about the encoding thing. What's it actually doing?
Yeah, what happens is when you have your video in your video editing software and you go ahead and you export that video is not in a format that is playable on the web, at least not yet. And that's because our video editing software, for whatever reason, they haven't caught up with the times where they allow you to export your videos in a format where they're immediately playable on the web. It just hasn't happened yet. So you export your video out of your video editing software. Now it has to be rendered again into a format so it's playable on the web. Now when you upload that video to YouTube, that's what YouTube does for you. YouTube is going to go ahead and convert your video into probably 20 different formats, and they're making sure that it's playable on all devices. Or in your case, James, when you upload your video to Wistia, they're going to do the same thing. Now, for someone who is self-hosting their videos, who isn't paying a service for this, and they want to do it on their desktop, the best free tool is something called Handbrake. And the website is handbrake.fr. And that is a desktop encoding tool where they're going to have presets where you can take your video after it's out of your video editing software and you can run it through this software, and it will prepare your video in a web-ready format so you could upload it to your website and everyone would be able to see it. Now, there are other options out there. I don't want to get too complex for people. Handbrake's the free one. You could end up spending $1,000 on some of these software packages, but for most people, if they start with a Handbrake product, that's really all they're ever going to need.
Yeah, I'll second that. Handbrake's awesome. Be sure to tick that little box that says web optimized, though.
Yes, yes.
Do you change the default setting to MP4 in Handbrake? I think there's an an advanced setting there that you tick.
Yeah. All the videos that I do for the web, I do as MP4. And the reason for that is they're going to be playable on the broadest range of devices. An MP4 video, it can play on your desktop computer, and it can play on 90% plus of all mobile devices as well. So that's why I do MP4.
Great. That's a good tip for information product creators, because you really want to cut down service calls from people who can't consume your product. So I learned that one the hard way. All right. So we're going to wrap up. Where can people find out more about Web Video University? Should I put a link near this audio, I guess?
Sure. What they can do is they can just go to webvideouniversity.com and they'll be hit with one of those annoying pop-ups. But what I'm basically giving away is I'm giving away 47 free video lessons. So, you know, all you have to do is put your name and email address in there and you'll get a link where you can see, 47 video lessons for free. And then about every week or two, I put out new lessons absolutely free. And you'll be able to access those as well. You'll be able to learn lots from me. If it turns out that you want to dive in and do more, then I've got lots of different training courses and packages out there where you can sign up and either watch pre-recorded videos of me or even learn from me one-on-one.
Dave, that's awesome. I really appreciate the tips today. We've covered some really interesting stuff. And hopefully we can catch up again in the future.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for having me, James.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.